Blog Talk Radio.
Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. And I am the light within your soul, in the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign, but to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I see aspiring to be free. And when I call to thee, and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Within and without, above and below, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. Without and within, below and above, yeah, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Lord of light and love, everything I find in tune with the divine. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign, but to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. I am the light within your soul, in the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And when I call to thee, and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. For to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat. Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Shabbat Shalom, holy angel of the Most High. Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.
Thank you for joining me here tonight on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George, and I'm your hostess this evening. The music you were just listening to is I Sense Your Presence by Shemshai, and I want to extend a welcome, whether you are returning because you've heard the show before or whether this is your very first time listening with us. We are streaming live in three additional places, TalkStream Live, StreamFinder, and Penn, also known as Prayer Encounters Network. And I welcome everybody through there, as well as those listening in our podcast, through YouTube, and also through iTunes and TuneIn.com. Here at Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I look at different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. Some weeks I've got great guests like tonight. Some weeks we're doing different exercises and practical implementations. Some weeks there's musical guests. And we've got all kinds of things going. Now, I will warn you that our show is going to be a little bit shorter than anticipated tonight because I am broadcasting from the road. I'm in Peru, Illinois tonight. And I just also want to put a big, giant thank you out there to Liana and her staff and all the incredible, amazing people at Inner Wisdom who were hosting me all week long, because they gave me one of the most amazing experiences of my life being there with them. And it was truly, truly, truly a gift. So anyways, I just want to give you that heads up that we probably are going to be a little bit shorter than normal. And if you do enjoy the show, make sure you share it with friends and family and people that you know, because this is going to be a really amazing show and you will not want to miss this show tonight. It's truly, truly going to be a gift to have Linda with us tonight. Now, a little look at a message for the week, and this is posted on my website, jessieannicholsgeorge1.com, and you can go back and read this throughout the week. And I was going to kind of cut this out tonight. It comes from the 72 names of God, but you know what? It is so appropriate, and I think it's hitting me right in the face tonight because I've tried everything to pull up power and internet, and we're here. So we're just going to have a little shorter time. And I think there's some other people that are probably dealing with some of this tonight or around this time as well with all the big influences that we have going on. And that is obstacles, both external and self-imposed. Often they stop us from achieving our objectives. And it's easy to be excited and optimistic at the start of a new endeavor, and challenges of many kinds, however, often prevent us from reaching our goals. We procrastinate and we postpone, passion wanes. Internal obstacles include fear, frustration, forgetfulness, doubt, and laziness. External challenges come in all shapes and sizes, but they're only a test. The imposing proverbial brick wall is usually a soft and cushy curtain, artistically painted and cleverly disguised to look like a brick wall, just to keep us from even trying to pass through. No one said the road to personal achievement and spiritual greatness was an easy one, but it's a road that can be successfully walked and completed along a picturesque and scenic route. And this comes from the 72 Names of God by Yehuda Berg, and part of his initial lead into this is, finish what you start. That's the common name of God for this particular insight, and the formal name is Lamed Kaf Bet, and his little lead-in was, whenever you feel like quitting, and I don't feel like quitting, and I've had amazing, picturesque, scenic routes along the way. The meditation that goes with this tonight is, you're endowed with the power to conclude everything you begin, especially tasks and goals of a spiritual nature. And again, that's going to be up on the website all week, so you can go back and reflect on it there. And I want to get right on and into our guest tonight so that we can have as much time with her as possible. This week, our guest is focusing on a component of compassion that's related to the aspect in my books of creating a new world. And it reminds us that the actions we choose and the information that we share with others will create a new world for us. And how things turn out in life is up to us and comes from using our creator energy. Now, I'd like to bring on my guest tonight, Dr. Linda Gadbois, and she's a visionary artist and founder of Creative Transformation, which is dedicated to providing people with higher education and strategic intervention that meets and exceeds the highest standards and most modern technologies in the areas of creative mind development, psychology, personal transformation, professional development, communication, the creative arts, consciousness studies, and integrative medicine. Dr. Gradbaugh shares also her wisdom in areas, for example, as spiritual sciences, evolutionary relationships, sacred sexuality, health and well-being, divine feminine, creativity, business, conscious dying, life things she deals in. It's starting to sound like the list on my website as well. We will be looking at her work tonight in crop circles, geometric patterns, and creative transformation. And you can learn more about her work at www.creativetransformations.biz/index.html. And I'm going to go ahead and get her mic opened up here tonight. Linda, it's really wonderful to have you with us tonight.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I know it's great to have your time here. It's great to have your energy with us tonight. I'd love for you to start off by sharing, you know, a little bit about who you are and what led you on this journey to doing all this incredible work that you're doing.
What led me on the journey? It's, I guess I would describe it probably as just a strong, inner, compelling type force that I've just always been very intrigued with spiritual sciences, metaphysics, quantum physics, mind, and, you know, in pursuing my education, I went into that area, and I particularly wanted to develop new techniques for various forms of healing, spiritual healing, psychological healing, and being able to bring the concept of mind over matter back into modern medicine and explore like the true cause of illness and disease, as well as just life patterns, tendencies, helping people to self-reflect, realize their own tendencies, and how they act to create in their lives. So, and naturally, you know, part of the reason why I was attracted to this type of stuff is because I had a great deal of healing to do myself, because I had a very rocky childhood, you might say, and just became very dedicated to the process of healing myself. And so in doing so, kind of developed a passion for helping other people to do their healing also.
Well, and I think that that is a big thing, because a lot of times I do find that where, you know, we're dealing with something and a lot of people think, well, you know, how do I bring out my passion? How do I know what my message is? And oftentimes our message is given to us because we have something going on in our life and we're trying to work through it and we're trying to learn and understand it. And it leads us down this amazing journey of not only self-discovery, but discovery of how the universe works, how things come together. And
right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But people, you know, the idea of finding your voice or finding your purpose, it's really easy to tell what your purpose is in life, because it's about what you love, what you have a natural love for, and what you have a tendency to gravitate towards. It's kind of like I tell people, Think of what it is that you're doing all the time automatically, and that is your purpose. You know what I mean? We, in our society, we have this thing about monetizing everything and turning it into a profession and stuff. And, well, you know, that's possible also. The life purpose doesn't necessarily have anything to do with a career. I mean, it may, you know what I mean? Or we may be able to incorporate a career into it, or move our life passion into a career direction. But it's mostly about the soul that has come here for certain types of experiences, and we incarnate into this life, so to speak, in the ideal situation that kind of sets the stage for certain experiences to take place that are ideal learning experiences. It's what some people refer to as karma, and as it, or learning through experience. Another way to look at karma is learning through life experiences. You learn things by actually living them and going through them, which is what allows self-realization. But in going through, you know, hardships, challenges, blocks, I mean, some people have very eventful lives, you know, lots of major events, a lot of trauma, a lot of, you know, emotional, physical abuse of different sorts. And it's all designed in the ultimate sense for us to learn through those experiences, because nothing allows us to see ourselves more clearly than when we're going through very challenging situations. So, but a person's passion, like, for example, I was, as a kid, always drawing, painting, I mean, just always gravitating towards art, always, you know, when most kids were out playing and doing stuff, I was grabbing a pencil and piece of paper and going out and sitting and drawing flowers or drawing trees, and I was always writing, and I had all kinds of journals going all the time, and that was just a natural passion for me, and it continued into my adulthood. I'm doing the same thing, basically, is writing, painting, teaching, learning, because that is like my soul's passion. And it ultimately formed my life purpose and my path, because I turned it into my career also. So,
I really agree with that, and I have done similar things. I always found myself helping people. I always found myself helping people see things from a different perspective, or get through a relationship issue, or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember before I set up some of the events that I'm doing on the tour that I'm on now, I sat back and said, do I really want to sit here at the computer 15 hours a day or more? And I said, no, I want to go hiking on trails. I love to be out in nature. And so I started creating events to be out in nature, and incorporating the transformational aspect, and it's getting, you know, people are just going away going, whoa, what just happened here? You know, it's like, I'm going to have to process this for a while, because my head's really full right now. and it is, and I've always loved to travel. I grew up traveling. My dad worked in the airlines, and so we traveled a lot, you know, and I just love this venture I'm on. It's taking some learning. I'm learning a lot,
yeah,
being on the road. But I truly, truly love it. I have to say, I feel like I have just taken another gigantic step into that whole aspect of my passion. And so I can completely relate to what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Now, I found, you know, kind of... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Go right ahead.
Yeah. Sometimes you kind of get thrown into things accidentally, so to speak. It's like I originally went to school for graphic design, and when I got out of school, I was having a hard time finding a job in graphic design, and I ended up taking a job that I went into management. And it turned out I was really good at management, and it was something that I was, I had kind of a passion for. But when I got into training, I realized I absolutely love training and working with people one-on-one. And in any time I'm in any kind of a teaching format, I'm just in my element. You know what I mean? So I started doing professional training programs for the company I was working for and setting up whole systems of development, professional development. And then that led to when I got into the spiritual sciences, doing all kinds of classes on spiritual sciences, and I kind of incorporated the psychology and, you know, creative mind development with the business in terms of personal development for people that was kind of geared towards a professional component, because it was easier to sell like seminars. I call them play shops. I do play shops where it's very experiential and I bring a lot of creativity in, so it's fun. You know what I mean? So we do a lot of things, and, you know, I joke around a lot, and I tend to use like real life situations to help people to understand how they're, you know, like, how do you know when this is actually happening? You know, you learn something like in a factual situation about human behavior or psychology or the tendencies of the mind, and then you say, okay, now what does this look like when you're actually seeing it? Mm-hmm. And then you pick a real life situation and you show people what it looks like when it's actually happening. Because the conversion isn't always, a lot of people can get the theory, but they can't get the practical application because it's more dynamic and it looks different and it's always a variation of sorts. But I got, you know, and I realized that I have, you know, my greatest passion was probably teaching, which allowed me to combine, you know, the art with the writing, and I love to learn. You know what I mean? I'm like a sponge for studying. I study every day, you know what I mean? Because I just, when we learn, it kind of comes in layers like healing does, where we learn something, and then depending on our level of maturity, we have certain realizations around it. And then, you know, maybe 2 years later or something, we kind of come back and revisit the same idea, and we have a whole different insight into it because our level of maturity has advanced in that amount of time. And so the knowledge deepens. It deepens and expands. So the more we get into the subject, the deeper and deeper we go, and the more profound it becomes, so to speak, in terms of how it affects every single area of our life. But I decided, you know, how do I combine? Because my idea was, how do I take all of my talents and gifts, all of my things that I love to do, and put them together and create one profession out of it? And that's when I designed educational business that basically focuses on classes, what I call adventure seminars, right? Because I love to travel too, and I love outdoor activities. So it's where you go to different places in the world for, you know, a 3 or 4 day seminar that also has either artistic engagement as far as entertainment or activities to participate in, or, you know, like nature hikes and sunset sails and helicopter rides, you know, just things to get people out into nature and experiencing life and kind of being one with the world, so to speak, but to do it in a fun environment that they can possibly bring your family along and almost make it a big vacation. It's kind of like a form of what they call entertainment, where you combine entertainment with education.
Yeah.
Because I personally believe that education, for the most part, can be made fun. It can be made something that's pleasurable and something that we thoroughly enjoy. So I just set up a whole bunch of different educational programs that are kind of geared in that way. So it allows me to, you know, do the presentations and teach and write and travel all at the same time.
And these are important things, and this is where I think sometimes people do struggle a little bit, is they don't try to engage all of their different aspects, and they kind of get lost or unfulfilled just trying to focus on one of them in
mm-hmm.
here. Now, you just have a huge, vast background of knowledge and wisdom and information. And, you know, we had to kind of narrow down. And when we first had you scheduled, you were going to come on earlier in the summer when the crop seasons were starting. Well, it's very ironic that now we're
yeah.
in the fall and we're in the harvest season of crops. And I didn't know when I rescheduled you that I would be sitting in the heart of farmland where they
right.
have most of the stuff going on right now. And and we decided to focus on crop circles. And I think this is a fascinating area for people because it connects us on one hand with so much that is so much bigger than ourselves. And then on another hand, it connects us with just, I don't know, different things from the land. It makes us question. You've got people out there going, oh, I've got all the scientific proof that crop circles are absolutely real. And then you've got other people going, no, that's just the government's test, and they're not real, and all these things. So I would love for you to share a little bit about what really is a crop circle.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, while we know the facts regarding a crop circle, of course, you can go study them, you know what I mean, and you can take equipment in and you can measure the electromagnetic fields and all that type of stuff. So we can get a lot of factual evidence about it. The fact of the matter is it's still one of the most true mysteries that's currently going on, or actually it's not current, they've been going on throughout history. A lot of people think that they just started like in the last, you know, 10 or 20 years. They've been going
mm-hmm.
throughout throughout history. So this has been a phenomena that has, it in recorded time, as far as we know, has always been happening. So it's not a new event, right? So a lot of the people who try to, and you got to understand that the government, and I'll say this lightly, right, because it might sound a little bit like an opinion, but the government has a tendency, any time that we have a phenomena that can't be explained, they want to, in order to kind of control the mass opinion, they bring in different evidence and things to basically discredit it or make it sound fraudulent or debunk it so that, you know, so that people won't keep watching it or keep, you know, looking into it. But crop circles are very much real. They're not fraudulent. They're not something that, I think they had like a Dave and or something where they brought on a program that showed how these two guys were, you know, artificially producing them. And, of course, that's ridiculous because crop circles, for example, I mean, some of them are as big as like 200,000 square feet. These are not small phenomena. Some of them are like several acres in size, and they're incredibly detailed and intricate and perfect in the design. And we know for a fact that they occur, they always occur overnight. And we have a couple of recordings where they were actually recorded while they were taking place, and they happened within a matter of 15 to 20 seconds. So,
wow.
The only question becomes, what is it that's causing them? Because there's always beams of light associated with them or spheres of light, which, you know, can be phenomena of various sorts, as well as, you know, the idea of an alien craft. But, I mean, we have, like, the northern lights, and we have all kinds of phenomena in the natural world that could also, be, you know, possibly be responsible for it. Like, one of the ideas scientifically is that it could be some kind of an electromagnetic discharge that's coming up actually out of the Earth itself. That, and these geometric patterns, which are ingrained, so to speak, in the human mind as well as the universal mind, are natural patterns that exist in vibratory frequencies themselves. Because I'm sure most people realize that a vibratory frequency naturally creates a geometric pattern. I mean, this is, you know, all kinds of scientific work has been done in this area where you take a vibration and, you know, like the old experiments where you took a drum head and you laid sand out on it and you struck the drum head with a certain tone, and the sand on top of it would shape into a geometric pattern. So there's a possibility, for example, that in the electromagnetic energy of the Earth, which, you know, electromagnetic energy is a form of consciousness, it naturally forms these geometric patterns just as a form of communication or consciousness that is mathematical in nature. So, I mean, and the thing about the crop circles is to just kind of get a little bit of a detail into how they're actually formed, is that they are, it's formed by a form of infrasound, which is similar to a microwave, in the sense that it forms an extreme amount of heat within what they call like a nanosecond, which is just a very quick time. Extreme heat forms, and it comes up and it heats through the center of, like, say, a blade of grass, for example, or a blade of wheat, and it heats the blade from the inside, causing it to bend over or literally melt, you might say, about an inch from the ground, forming a perfect 45-degree angle where it then cools and stays in that position without harming the plant. So none of these stems are broken. They're all just bent, and the plants themselves continue living. So nothing dies in this process.
This is some of the stuff that's very fascinating to me, because I was reading about some of this stuff, and I heard that some of these electromagnetic frequencies, and we look at these and we go, oh, that's a bad thing, right? Because that comes through our cell phones, and that comes through our computers and our microwaves. And I can't remember exactly what it was off the top of my head, but they were saying it was like 10 times the amount of electromagnetic frequency as radiation or something. I don't know. It was something extreme. And so the question naturally comes to mind, if that's the case, how does it shift then from being so damaging to us to being healing? Because a lot of people will go and stand in these fields and say they've been healed of something.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, electromagnetic fields are universal. I mean, they're not what we call bad energy. I mean, we are an electromagnetic field in our mind, which is kind of like equated to like the aura of our body, the energy field that extends our body, which in spiritual sciences is what we actually refer to as the mind itself, is an electromagnetic field. And it's not necessarily that, you know, all electromagnetic fields are harmful to the body. What it is that we're entrained by them. So they very much affect us. For example, the electromagnetic resonance, or the a residue, I call it, that's kind of left over from the crop circles that lasts for several days, actually has a huge effect on people who actually enter the crop circles or even stand nearby them, or even in whole communities where, like, the batteries of cars won't work for a day, or, you know, they have problems with their cell phones won't work and their computers won't work, and it kind of lingers for a little while, then it just slowly dissipates. And some people experience a healing effect, like you said, when they go inside the crop circle itself, and other people get nauseated, dizzy, they start having tremors, and they basically feel sick. So it's just a question of how it affects each individual in terms of our own electromagnetic field and how it kind of like resonates with the electromagnetic field that's kind of imbued in the crop circle itself. The electromagnetic fields have all kinds of frequencies, some of which are very healing, you have a real pleasurable, kind of like euphoric feeling when you're experiencing them, and other ones they make you feel sick. You lose consciousness, you get dizzy, you feel weak. So So it's just a question of what type of frequency is happening.
Right.
And the microwave, I mean, microwaves, we bring it down and through electricity and create microwave ovens or cell phones and stuff that work off of the microwave technology, but microwaves themselves are part of a natural part of the Earth's atmosphere. They're just in the upper atmosphere, and they're not, you know, they're not right down here with us, being concentrated into, you know, instruments that are used to cook things. You know what I'm saying?
But right.
They're a natural part of the atmosphere. So, again, it's just how something is used. It's like electricity can be used to bake bread, or it can be used to electrocute somebody. I mean, it's kind of the same idea.
It comes back to that same old concept that all things are neutral. It just depends on how they end up getting harnessed and worked
exactly with
along the way in here.
Yeah.
Now, it seems like a lot of times, at least from pictures I've seen about crop circles,
mm-hmm.
that there seem to be certain patterns or certain shapes that prevail or, repeat. They tend to maybe be spirals or circular patterns or triangular patterns. Can you share with us about that?
Yeah. The basic shapes, if anybody's familiar with sacred geometry or gematria, there's a lot of different, we call sacred sciences out there that are on a form of philosophical mathematics, which is where shapes represent natural laws. And these natural laws govern all of the natural world. And what a law is basically a form that functions in a certain way as part of a creative process. So these patterns, and it's the same geometric patterning that's inherent in frequencies, which is where we got it from, right? I mean, we developed sacred geometry because it's ingrained in the human mind, and as well as being obvious in all of nature, through the spiraling motions the spiraling motion basically represents what's referred to as a fractal pattern. And it's like the conical shell universuses are spiral in nature. Everything, DNA of our body, electromagnetic fields themselves form a spiral because you have one force that's magnetic and one that's electric. So it's like pushing away from itself. At the same time, it's turning into itself. And that's what creates a spiraling motion. But the geometric shapes are actually images or patterns that act as what we could call a formula. And in a geometric pattern, everything is important, right? In a symbolic image, how many circles there are, for example, is important. The size. You have like a large one and you have two small ones on both sides, or you have six spiraling arms, each have nine spheres that go from large down, in a gradient type form down to small. It creates what we could call a mathematical formula that represents an idea. And if you know how to read the geometry and understand that the laws they're representing, then it gives you patterns, basically, for they're just ideas that are quite profound and very, very scientific in nature. And they're giving us technology, basically, information, you know what I mean, about certain creative processes, about energy.
Which definitely seems like why different shapes seem to have different effects, or why we relate certain things maybe to more masculine energy or more feminine energy. It's really kind of a universal language in a way. We look at it and say, oh, nice, square, circle, triangle, whatever. as the everyday
right.
person. But in reality, it's a language. It's an energy vibration, just like everything. And I know I had a guest on earlier this year who really does all of this number stuff. And
mm-hmm. right.
I know that's
gotcha.
A very common way to say it. But she,
yeah.
you know, she decoded ancient patterns of Isis, and Isis's formulas for perfumes
mm-hmm.
Because of the number patterns. And
right.
we minimize numbers so much, I think, in our culture, and yet we don't normally think of them being what creates a shape like this.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, you're exactly right. The sacred geometry is the universal language, and it's actually the original language. And, you know, we say that God speaks to us in numbers. You know what I mean? Well, it's not. Sacred geometry are shapes that form correspondence. There's a whole series of correspondences that we refer to as the law of analogies, that where a shape is represented by a number, a letter, a color, a tone. You see what I mean? A certain shape.
Right. If we were
so
to go into, if we were to go into our computer and we were to pick a color, we're going
mm-hmm.
to see that that color is formula RB1279. It's not
right. Okay.
Blue.
Yeah.
It's a formula name there. So sure.
Yeah,
I mean that.
Another way to look at that, you know what I mean? Because we're so used to thinking in those type of terms. But another way to think of it is that the color blue, for example, when you look at colors, have psychological effects that create what we call states of mind. The state of mind represents what we could technically refer to as a vibratory frequency. So a person's
mm-hmm.
frequency, for example, what we call their frequency, is reflected by their general state of mind or the mood that they're in most of the time. So psychologically speaking, when you look at the color blue, it creates a mental impression and gives you a certain type of feeling, and that is the vibratory frequency that that color represents. It's a mental,
so
emotional state of mind.
So it's kind of like that color uses this number vibration to tell your brain, for example, how to respond so that you get a certain emotion.
Right. You could think of it
okay.
as tuning you to that the frequency of that color.
Okay.
By creating, like you said, a state of mind. I mean, we know in psychology that you know, like in environments, you know, you create healing environments. Hospitals are now doing it, schools, that colors are very important in an environment because of the mental state that they create, how a person feels when they're exposed to certain colors. And energy as a frequency isn't analytical as far as like a thought or, you know, a sentence, or we're going to sit here and try and describe something. But what it actually is it's a state of mind. And out of that state of mind comes a natural reality, right? And a real easy way to think of it is when you're in a bad mood, all you know, you focus on things that make you feel bad, you think thoughts that make you feel bad, you recall memories of times when you felt bad. Every reality that comes out of that state of mind is an expression of feeling bad. Likewise, if you're in a happy, euphoric, some people call it, you know, feeling gratitude, and you create
mm-hmm.
that state of mind, what you focus on the things that reflect or that express that state of mind or give you more of that state of mind. So you reflect on positive things, and you have positive thoughts, and you feel positive emotions in response to your own thoughts, and the reality or the experience that you produce out of that is of a positive nature. So that's the way to really think of energy as frequencies or an electromagnetic field, is that it's a state of mind out of which natural realities spontaneously emerge. So if you have a real positive state of mind, for example, you're not going to get a negative reality out of it. It's impossible, actually. You see what I mean?
And
whatever mood you're in.
And that would explain also why one time we're okay with a certain color, another time we don't want to have anything to do with it, or why one person is agreeable to a color, somebody else is not agreeable to the same color.
Right.
Because of
exactly
where they're at or coming from. So when that formula interacts with them, the response comes out differently.
Right.
Based on their space, it's like here again that the color is neutral, but if we're in a negative space when we take it in, we're going to go one direction, and if we're in a positive space when we take it in, we're going to go a different direction with it.
Right. It's just like colors, as far as vibration goes, represent different wavelengths. I mean, we could get real technical here, you know what I mean? But basically, you know, the lower colors, like in the chakra system, red is grounded in the frequency range, is the lowest or the longest frequency range. And then orange gets a little bit shorter, you know, yellow is a little bit shorter. When you get up to violet, you've got an extremely short frequency range. And what that means is that there's a lot of peaks and valleys happening within a short, it's vibrating at a very fast rate. And what that means is that you have, could call, a lot of information being conveyed. This is the intuitive component, where information is conveyed just through a feeling and a knowing. Whereas when you're on the low frequencies that have like long frequency waves, you're more in an intellectual type experience where you're actually thinking about stuff and having to figure things out, or you have to have knowledge about something in order to know about it. It carries a lot less information. Whereas an intuitive experience or a high vibration is, first of all, it has a feeling of kind of expansiveness. This is why some people say it's hard to handle high energy. High vibration is because it expands, it wants to expand, and it feels like it can have a tendency to overwhelm people. It's kind of giddy, excited, bubbly in nature. But this is what really activates the intuitive component, which, like I said, is where you can completely know about something without knowing why you know. But you're clear on the fact that you know. You just automatically tune into knowledge and information, rather than having to, like, you know, read a book to get it, or you know, learn about it from somebody. You're actually tuning into the frequency itself.
I do that a lot, and I drive people crazy around me, because it's just like, well, I just know it. I just know that it does this. I don't know the whole scientific explanation behind it, but I know that this is what it does. And it's really fun. And your explanation, what was going off for me during that explanation as well, was it was coming up how it correlates with the chakras. So it's not, you know, when we talk about these upper and lower vibrations, for example, in our chakras, this explains where the colors came from and why they got placed in these different areas of the chakras, was because of these vibrational frequencies being longer or shorter in there. And that's why purple went with our intuitive centers versus our reds and our yellows and stuff that went with our lower chakras.
Exactly.
It puts the pieces together when you talk about it. And I know that I get so excited to read, like, your blogs that you put out. I'm like, oh, she put another one out. And I tell you, there's a lot that I just skim over. But with yours, there's so much information packed in your post. And I will actually sit there and read it. And I love it. It might take me 20 minutes because I have 20,000 thoughts that trigger off in my head and come together.
Right.
But
that's good. That's
I
good.
Encourage
that's
people.
Supposed to.
Yeah. I try to bring
what I call higher concepts down to earth. You know what I mean? And I try to explain them in a way like that helps people to relate it to their everyday life so that they can
mm-hmm.
understand how they actually operate in the normal sense. Because some of these ideas, you know, I mean, if we can conceptualize them and kind of like get them in theory, some people, we really have a hard time bringing them into practice in our life. So I like to try and explain how this idea up here that seems really complicated, when you actually bring it down into practice in your daily life, is actually not that complicated. You know what I mean? I try to explain it in a way that's easy to understand.
Yes.
So that it's not confusing to people. But let me find out one crop circle that comes to mind to kind of give you an idea of how the geometric, the symbols, how they work as a formula.
Okay.
This is the one that has the human being that has the butterfly wings. And
okay.
If you notice, the position of the body itself is very symmetrical and balanced. And, of course, the butterfly wings means transformation. It's a symbol of transformation. And the circles, the spheres that form the outline of the butterfly wings, there's 9 of them. 9 is the number of perfection. So we're talking personal transformation as self-perfection. It has the 2 antennas coming off the top of the head, you know, typical little butterfly, right? With the 2 little spheres
right.
on the end of the antenna. And this, you know, can be looked at as symbolizing the symmetry of the body, you know, we have a right lobe and a left lobe, right brain, left brain. Most of the glands in our body are symmetrical, they're 2 lobes. And it's a dynamic interaction between, you know, feminine and masculine, passive and active, creative and intellectual, that creates it's the equilibrium of the interaction between the two that actually forms balance and harmony. And then the wings themselves, you have upper ones and 2 lower parts because each wing has 2 sections. And, of course, again, we have symmetry indicated with the dyad of the 2, which is the when the monad separates and forms the dyad, you get the vesica piscis, which is the called the womb of creation. But this is where we basically interact with our environment. We interact with the same frequencies of ourself in our environment, and we create a joint reality out of what we have in common with our environment or with other people. So this is kind of like the idea that the monad as the mind or the individual separates and then acts on itself in other people or only sees more of itself in other people. And that gets a little bit complicated, but that's just because the mind is our perceptual filter as our vibratory frequency, and we tend to only see in the world what matches us or what can be used to tell the same story or what we can incorporate into our experience to keep creating the same type of experiences over and over, where we're telling the same type of stories. And also the wings in the 4 sections indicates the tetragrammaton, which is the number 4, represents the 4 elements, which represents physical reality. So we're talking about transforming physical reality of the body through personal transformation as the process of self-perfection. So, I mean, that's what I mean when I
Very
say that
cool.
it actually creates like a formula.
Right.
You see what I mean? That communicates a whole idea. And then there's other components I can't think of them right offhand in that image that will give you even more information about the process of creative transformation.
Oh, I love this stuff. See, this stimulates me because I do so much integration of pieces, so it makes a lot of sense to me.
Right.
And I knew that even if I had a full 2 hours, I was going to have you back because you're such a humongous wealth of information and insights on things. And, you know, remind us and remind our listeners where they can get hold of you, your website,
oh, okay.
or how they best contact you or those sorts of things. Because I want to get that in here tonight.
Okay, cool. Well, my name is Dr. Linda Guedbois, and my website and my business is called Creative Transformations, Education for Enlightenment. It's an educational business that is designed to inform and give knowledge to people, and it's www.creativetransformations.biz, and my email address is Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at creativetransformations.biz. And my phone number, my business phone number, is 303-726-9344.
I wanted that to make sure we got that in because just in case my computer drops off here, and I'm watching the battery go down on it. I wanted to make sure that we got in how people could contact you. I have to have you back, and we have to delve into more stuff, and I'm going to let you pick topics the next time I bring you back on.
Okay.
You covered really some very interesting pieces here because the crop circles are so interesting. There's so many dimensions, and you, I think, brought actually a wealth of information in this period of time. And I do encourage anybody who has came in late to the show, because sometimes people are used to coming in late because I do some of the preliminary stuff, to go in and to listen to this from the beginning and to catch what she says and to get in there and sign up for anything that she has, follow her blogs. Like I said, Linda puts these things out there, and she does have this way of bringing it down. And even though she deals in these very scientific concepts, it's going to give you a lot to think about, and it's going to give you a lot of things that you're going to go, oh, I get it, and it makes sense to me, and this is really cool. Because I think what happens is a lot of people don't get that in-depth explanation about things that you provide. And it is worth the time and it's worth the read that you put out there. I mean, I am so appreciating your time tonight, and I'm so appreciating you being here and being flexible and offering up what you have tonight. And I don't want to stop the show. I don't want to cut it off, but I'm afraid that if I don't start to wrap it up, it's just going to die out on me here. And I encourage people to check out your events because I know they're incredible. And I do promise to come back next week. Is there any kind of closing thought that you want to leave people with?
Well, I would say probably just in terms of our subject tonight, the crop circles, is probably just to add that anytime you're dealing with a geometric shape or a design of some kind, like I said, I think I said earlier, everything in that design is purposeful. Everything in it is exact. It's there for a reason. And so things like what shape they're using, if the shape, what proportion they're using, like big shapes that go to small shapes, or, you know, like I said, one big shape that has two smaller shapes on each side. So proportions are important, and numbers, counting how many of the shapes they use, how many legs they're using, how many parts to a star, for example, they're using. Counting those, getting the numbers involved with the shapes, which, believe it or not, represent natural laws. It's called sacred geometry, for those of you who know a little bit about it but not quite sure. And so you want to study these images and count them out, get the shapes, and that'll help you to put together the formula that's communicating a whole idea in the image. So it's a beautiful way of communicating, and it has no language barriers. You know, we talked about how it was the universal language. You know, all the hieroglyphs and, you know, once upon a time, the language that was used by what we call the ancient people was images. They were symbolic images. We didn't have a written language. We didn't have different languages. People communicated with images that formed mental impressions that conveyed whole ideas in them. And then, you know, in the Bible, I think it is, it talks about they created the Tower of Babel, which is where languages were designed, and they were designed intentionally to confuse people and to make it so that people had difficulty communicating, because, of course, now we have language barriers, right? Not only language barriers, but also the ideas that are conceptualized or conveyed in certain languages are they express different experiences than other languages. The same word in a different language will have a different experience associated with it. So it really makes the language barrier huge in terms of the world today. Whereas the sacred geometry and these geometric shapes, there is no language barrier. Anybody that can interpret them and understand what the laws they represent can get the information that they're communicating. So I just want to kind of let people know that how to read these images, so to speak.
It really is so fascinating. There's just so much more to the art and the pictures and everything that are there than I think most of us have looked at. I want to say thank you tonight, because I just think my computer's about ready to go out here, which means we're going to lose the show if it does.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to say goodbye at this point. But thank you so much for your time, Linda. And we will
go
back on again and get you a full show where we can just delve into more and more and more of your work.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jesse. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure being
You're
here.
You're welcome. And next week I'm going to be doing one of my own shows here, so tune in. I'm going to be dealing with things that have to do with connecting with animals and how that plays into our life. Also, I am on tour, so check it out. Go on my website, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1.com. I've still got several events. I have been in Illinois, getting ready to head into Connecticut, Massachusetts, Maryland, Washington, D.C., Rhode Island, the whole works back there on the East Coast, and go ahead and delve into that. My October special is up on my website. Don't forget, we've got several shows here on Main Street Universe throughout this week. Sunday nights, Darren Bucare, who's a reader at Madame Laveau in New Orleans, doing spiritual insights. Monday nights is Randy Goldberg doing Vedic astrology. Tuesday, Susan Weed, who is sharing her work in herbs and natural plants. Wednesday nights, we have Daniel and Janice running our flagship show. Thursdays, we oftentimes have Queen Mother Imaku on, working with her show. Kevin Baird comes on regularly, walking on the sidewalk with his Horizon Oracle Journeys deck, which you can learn more about that at templeofgaia.com. And, of course, Friday nights here is Activating Compassion, the Midnight Hour. I do want to mention I'm going to be on much earlier next week, so you will need to tune in earlier and check on the time for that. And we're getting ready to really expand the network here, so you want to stay tuned for more information on that as we go along in upcoming weeks. Thank you so much for being here tonight. This is Jessie Ann Nichols George. And thank you to all of our listeners, those streaming through Penn, Parent Encounters Network, StreamFinder, TalkStream Live, as well as those catching our podcast at iTunes, TuneIn.com, and also those catching the YouTube version of our show, which will be coming up in upcoming weeks. It's taking me a little longer to get it up from the road, but the archive of this show, which you can get to from the same link you used to get into the show tonight, you can share that with your friends and let them come in and get this wealth of information tonight. It's available as soon as we close out the show tonight. And do share it if you've enjoyed listening to the show. I'm going to go ahead and leave you with the song Yearning For, also known as Over and Over. And we will catch you next week right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend and have a really, truly amazing week. And maybe we're going to get a closing song. Or maybe not, because it's feeling like it doesn't want to work that way. The server's doing something funky tonight. So you know what? We're just going to close out tonight because it's about ready to go. It may not make it through the last closing song anyways. We'll see you next week. Take care. This is Jessie.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.